Welcome to the Sadler Lectures podcast. Responding to popular demand, I'm converting my philosophy videos into sound files you can listen to anywhere you can take an MP3. If you like what you hear and want to support my work, go to patreon.com/sadler. I hope you enjoy this lecture. Chapter 4 of Book 1 of Epictetus's Discourses is entitled in English, On Progress, or Peri Prokopes in Greek. And the question then is, what constitutes progress in Stoic philosophy, which means what constitutes progress towards our human good, for what is fundamentally best for us? Now, Epictetus is not parting from the traditional Stoic perspective in talking about virtue and what virtue is supposed to provide us. He tends to use that term a little bit less than some of the other Stoic authors that we can come across, because he tends to be more focused on the nuts and bolts about how we actually make our way towards virtue. But virtue is really going to be the good for the Stoic, and virtue is, you might say, the way in which our rational faculty or our faculty of choice, which we've seen are really in many respects the same thing, how they are arranged, what sort of condition they are in. Are they in accordance with nature, out of accordance with nature? The specific virtues, you know, of temperance or justice or courage or wisdom, there isn't quite so much discussion about that here. It's just the generic conception of virtue. And where is Epictetus getting this from? Well, in part, and this is one of the key points about this, in part by having been taught Stoicism from a teacher who actually used books of other Stoics and expounded on that sort of thing, but also by putting it into practice, you might say experientially. And not experientially in the sense of, well, I'm going to try it once and then I'm done if it doesn't work out for me, because part of the very doctrine of Stoicism is that sort of thing is not going to work because we are partly screwed up when we start the process, so we're not in an adequate position to fully appreciate what is being taught in Stoicism in an experiential way until we start making some progress. Now, what's going on here is a concern about what we could call a disjunction between the theoretical perspective and the practical perspective, between not necessarily book smarts and street smarts, because street smarts and book smarts actually kind of coincide, but rather being able to not only put things into practice, but recognize that the true test of this is that we can put it into practice. That is our grounds for what verification we're going to get. And I don't mean verification in the sense that verificationists mean by it, but it's something more robust. Our grounds for that are going to lie partly in how we engage the world and partly in how we reflect upon our own processes and whether we're making progress. So we need some sort of goal, you could say, or touchstone. And the Stoics called that, like several of the other schools of antiquity did, the sage, the wise person, hosophos, right? But they didn't think of the sage primarily as a totally disengaged figure up on the mountaintop, you know, dispensing wisdom to those who climb the mountain. The sage would be somebody who you could see in the world actually living out the Stoic perspective. They thought that Socrates, some of them thought at least that Socrates was such a person. Other people looked to other models. Some people looked to Epictetus himself. And what distinguished the sage? It was not just having an intellectual comportment or having a whole arsenal of ideas, let alone having a well-stocked library. It was possessing and exercising virtue, behaving in a virtuous manner in all circumstances. A lot of people get very caught up on wanting to have the sage fully defined for them before they can buy into this path. Epictetus would say it's a little bit of cart before the horse. You're not going to fully recognize what the sage is until you're at least partly on the way. And how do you get partly on the way? Not by worrying about who the sage is or whether they have existed or what their ideal characteristics would be or anything like that, because that's really a theoretical exercise. Now, he has some fun things to say here about some people make the mistake, and I say this a lot in philosophy myself, I've been subject to it as well, thinking that progress in art of living, the art of living well, is somehow having read and digested and perhaps even memorized and being able to trot out quotations from Chrysippus. Chrysippus was one of the ancient Stoic authors, the third scholar or leader of the school. He is probably one of the most prolific authors of antiquity. We have lost practically everything that he's written, so we just have to take Epictetus' word for it and other Stoics that it was really quite something to read. But reading books by themselves and thinking about their content is not going to automatically lead to practice. As a matter of fact, it's not just Epictetus who observes this, it's also Aristotle, it's also other people. I'm going to say the goal of practical philosophy is to do things in a certain way. It's to culminate in action, in praxis. So having read lots of Chrysippus, not really going to provide you a hallmark for progress. So he says, when we acknowledge virtue to be a thing of this sort, how comes it we seek progress and make a display of it in other things? What is the work of virtue? Serenity. Who then is making progress? The man who's read many treatises? What is virtue no more than this, to have gained a knowledge of Chrysippus? Now he's not totally dismissing this, as we're going to see. There is a great utility to studying Stoic philosophy. But a little bit later on, he's going to have another great example. He says, now if we talk to an athlete, we say, show me your shoulders. And then the athlete could say, well, look at my weights that I used to build those. And Epictetus says, I'm not interested in those. I'm interested in the effects of those weights on your shoulders. Show me your shoulders. And so it's similar to that. Take the treatise upon choice, so one of the things that had been written, and see how I mastered it. And Epictetus says, that's not what I'm looking into, but how you act in your what? How you act in your choices and refusals. Your hormai, plural, and apormai. Your what you choose to do and what you refrain from doing, right? Or reject. Your desires and your aversions. What are you actually desiring? What are you averse to? You might say, well, we can't really see inside a person's head and know what their desires and aversions are. Epictetus doesn't think that's the case at all. We see the evidence of it in how they react. And we can ask them, why are you acting the way that you are? Well, I don't want that to happen to me. Now we know about somebody's aversions, right? So we can consult them. How they approach and use things, or he's going to say in other chapters, how we use appearances, the phantasiae, the things that we encounter. All of this provides us with evidence whether somebody has indeed taken a Stoic perspective and is following through on it in a practical way, not a merely theoretical way. So he says, show me whether you're acting in harmony with nature or out of harmony with it. If you're acting in harmony, show me that, and I will tell you you're making progress. But if out of harmony, then go away and don't confine yourself to expounding your books, but why don't you go and write some book yourself? He's sort of saying, self-help person, write your own book. It only matters if you can put it into real practice and if you can do so consistently. So what else does this mean? He says a little bit later on, it means the person who's making progress withdraws themselves from externals. That doesn't mean that they disengage themselves from the world and, you know, shut themselves up in a basement apartment and never come out and unless it's late at night and nobody's around. No, what it means is that they do not place their desires and aversions out there attached to things in the world. They focus on what's within, namely their proiresis, their faculty of choice, translated also as moral purpose. They begin to examine their reasoning about things, not just in general and not just in theoretical terms, but in very practical terms. They begin to look at themselves. They begin to take stock of their habits and their ways in which they react in a knee-jerk fashion to see whether there's something that needs to be changed there, something that needs to be examined there. They engage in the sort of thing that other traditions of moral philosophy and other practices like, say, spiritual direction or psychoanalysis or, you know, pick whatever you like, have also engaged in, looking to see what really makes us behave the way that we do and whether we have some control over it, whether we can shape and reshape it through some judicious decisions about it so that we can actually start going towards the goal that we want, which is virtue and tranquility, a kind of security that we can possess where the outside world and what's happening with it and all the crazy people in it aren't going to get to us and bother us because we have focused on what really is in our control. He talks about working upon, the term is ex ergosi, and that means to, you know, sort of like an erga is in fact a work. Right? So when you go to work and you work on something, it doesn't necessarily have to be, you know, hammering something out. It could be doing a spreadsheet, a lesson plan, shooting a video. You are working, right? Now imagine that you're not working on external things, but you're actually working upon yourself. Not saying things that just make you feel good for a moment, but really taking stock of what your situation is and then doing the sort of things that would be required to perfect, to bring your proiresis, your faculty of choice, that whole complex of desires, aversions, beliefs, all that, into accordance with nature. Or as he'll also say in this, so as to harmonize, symphone with nature. Nature not meaning just doing what comes naturally to you, or, you know, looking at use of, say, natural science research, or evolutionary biology, or any of those sorts of things. Those would all, by the way, be dogmata, so systems of dogmata, according to Epictetus. And it'd be up to you whether you want to incorporate those or not. If you think that those are automatically binding on you because you read something in science, which may, in fact, be confuted later on, that would be your choice, ultimately. But that's not what he means by nature. He means fully developed human nature. And we have a choice about whether we want to develop ourselves along those ways, if we want to make progress or not. So, is there any utility then to, say, reading Chrysippus? There is. And this is very important to point out, because I don't want to give you the impression that Stoicism means saying, let's throw the book away and just do what we want to do, right? He says, what then does Chrysippus furnish us? Well, that you may know that these things are not false from which serenity arises and tranquility comes to us. Take my books and you shall know how conformable and harmonious with nature are the things which render me tranquil. And he says, oh, great good fortune, oh, the great benefactor who points the way. So, you know, we should in fact think that Chrysippus is a great guy. And if we in fact had his books, we can, you know, imagine ourselves having his books, we should read them. But we shouldn't mistake actually reading those things and sitting there and thinking about them with the putting them into action that those books, were we to take them seriously the way that we ought to, would require us to do. We can say the same thing about Epictetus's book. It's one thing to have a theoretical understanding of the system and how it all fits in together and what's a proiresis and what's a prolepsis and all these technical terms. It's a whole different thing, and trust me, much, much harder to actually put this into practice and follow through on it. But you really only fully understand the philosophy for the Stoics when you are in the process of making progress. So a theoretical understanding is in certain respects dependent on a practical understanding, because that's where the art of living lies.
Special thanks to all of my Patreon supporters for making this podcast possible. You can find me on Twitter at Philosopher70, on YouTube at the Gregory B. Sadler channel, and on Facebook on the Gregory B. Sadler page. Once again, to support my work, go to patreon.com/sadler. Above all, keep studying these great philosophical works.